11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hey folks, it is Monday, May 11th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 14 of the Beyond the Handle podcast. I'm your host, Alan, also known as @Slip on Twitter. That's Slip with five I's or Slip. On today's show, I was very fortunate to be joined by DJ Penny Lane, known as @DJ Penny Lane on Twitter. And we discussed her wildly successful radio show on UMFM, known as Punks in Parkas, which can be found at many different places all over the internet. It is on UMFM radio, but also syndicated widely on many mod networks. And we talk about the mod culture, mainly about music, which is what I'm mostly interested in. So a little bit of history of the mod music scene and the mod culture scene, some recommendations of different bands, vinyl and collecting vinyl, which is, again, one of my favorite topics. And we talk about the style that surrounds the mod culture. We also talk about Penny Lane's beginnings in radio and as a live DJ. And we talk briefly about some future projects coming up for her as well. So you'll need to check all of that out. Last week's episode featured @TJ_Mauchan, M-A-U-G-H-A-N, and was a really fun episode that you should also go back and have a listen to, along with all of the episodes of Beyond the Handle prior to this one. It's been 14 weeks now, so very exciting stuff indeed. So with all that being said, let's get right into the interview. This is DJ Penny Lane, @DJ Penny Lane on Twitter, here on Beyond the Handle. Hey everybody, it's episode 14 of the Beyond the Handle podcast, and as always, I have another great guest on the phone with me today. I have DJ Penny Lane, who is, to me, most well-known for her radio show on UMFM, Punks and Parkas, which I enjoy as a podcast. I don't usually get to hear it live, but definitely download it as a podcast and listen every week, and actually got to know her while I was living out of town, but kind of trying to be part of a mod scene out in Ottawa, which I want to get her thoughts on too. Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Thank you very much. I don't know if you know a lot about the Ottawa mod scene. I know that you follow Gaz and Emmett.
Yeah, I know them, and I kind of get the skinny from them periodically. Mostly, Gaz or Gary, as I know him.
Gary, yeah. He DJed at a club in Ottawa called Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Yes, best name ever.
Yeah, and so that's where I first kind of heard him, and then him and Emmett started the Mod Club, and I guess they're coming up on 10 years as well, but that was a Sunday night staple when I lived out there.
Yeah, it's still going strong. He says they just rake in the crowds on Sunday nights, too.
It is, and they're right next to a large bar in Ottawa called Barrymore's, which I'm assuming still has 80s night on Sundays as well, so. It's nice to bounce back and forth though. And they've done very well the whole time I was there. So I'm glad that they are still growing strong. The first question I like to ask people on this show is to get the story behind the handle. So @DJ Penny Lane, can you tell me a little bit about how the name came about?
Well, the handle part is kind of boring because I figured, well, since I'm known as DJ Penny Lane, that better be my Twitter handle. But, how I got the name is kind of funny. I started my show without a DJ name. I had a show name, Punks and Parkas, but I didn't have a quote unquote DJ name. And my friend, the Invisible Man, who hosts a show, it used to be called Right on Time, but now he calls it The Invisible Man Presents, which is Fridays on UMFM. Okay. He was kind of the one who got me involved in radio and DJing and everything. And, it was, do they call it Black Thursday or I don't even know what they call it, but it's the bar night before Good Friday, which is like the busiest bar night in the city.
And you made reference to this was the first gig that you did as a DJ?
It was my very first gig. He's like, I need you to come and cover for an hour, hour and a half. He's like, I have, you know, my partner's not here. I have another engagement, just an hour. So I got to the bar. He showed me how to DJ. He left and he didn't get back to the bar till 1 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And so there I am. And huge bar, packed. And when he came up finally at the end of the night, he just was like, oh, here's DJ Penny Lane. And that's just how he just named me DJ Penny Lane. And I was like, oh, okay, I can deal with that. It kind of stuck. So, and I'm a huge Beatles fan. So I think that's why he called me that.
And that's, and it's stuck around now for a decade. And
a decade.
And Punks and Park, as you said, in the next month is going to be reaching a 10-year anniversary.
Yeah. My first show was May 30th, 2005. So yeah, end of the month.
Wow.
No.
I've been doing my show at CKUW for less than 5 months and I'm already feeling like, wow, like 10 years. Jeez.
I couldn't even tell you where the time has gone, to be honest.
So the name of the show is Punks and Parkas. How did that name originate?
Well, I wanted to do a mod show. That was my original proposal at the station. And I wanted a name that was catchy. I wanted something that was slightly tongue-in-cheek. I love wordplay. And to me, you know, when I started the show, I was really, you know, green behind the ears in the mod scene. I didn't know a lot. I knew some, but I was learning a lot. And to me, all the early research I had done to my chagrin, punks were, you know, mods were kind of these punky kids. And I don't mean punks like with the Mohawks. I mean punks as in they kind of rebelled against society and they were, you know, they weren't afraid to get in a scruff. They weren't afraid to fight. But they wore these parkas, right? These military issued parkas that were in abundance in the UK in the 60s. So to me, they were literally punks in parkas. And I liked the alliteration. I liked the imagery of the, you know, the name. And it just came to me one day and I was like, that's it. That's it.
That's the name of the punks show.
That's the name of the show. Because I also have roots. Like, I really love punk music as well. So to me, it was just a natural kind of name for it.
Let's travel back in time a little bit. I kind of want to get a sense for how your musical tastes kind of evolved over time. So maybe in broad strokes, starting from kind of the first big thing that you were into and how you kind of worked your way through to the mod
scene. Well, that's embarrassing.
Mine is too.
I think everybody's is, right? It's time and place. Music wasn't a big thing in our house. There wasn't a lot of music being played. So I kind of got into listening to a lot of music in early high school, like really listening to it. And I was a huge U2 fan, like obsessive U2 fan.
Okay.
I don't know how or why, but anything by them, I was gobbling it up. I was traveling to shows. I was buying bootlegs. It was insane. And from there, when you find a band you like, you start to kind of look back to their influences. And with U2, they had an album called Rattle and Hum.
Yeah.
Which has a lot. It was them kind of exploring the blues scene and the rhythm and blues scene in America. And that to me was kind of a lot of my first introduction to real R&B music, rhythm and blues music. And from there, I just, you know, it was a natural progression. I started to get into that. My mom liked 60s music, so when she saw me getting into that kind of rhythm and blues stuff, she was pointing me towards, you know, Jefferson Airplane. She's like, well, you might like The Who, you might like this. And then when I discovered the Beatles, it was kind of, that was it. And I just went off from there. It was like, I just gobbled up everything that was British and 60s. And that's kind of where it really developed for me. It was like, I just wanted that sound. There was something about that British early 60s sound that I loved. And then from there, I discovered soul music and Northern soul and ska and all these other, I don't want to say subgenres, but all these other musical genres that kind of fit under this whole mod umbrella. And I'm gobbling it up with a spoon.
So at what point in time in your life were you like really getting heavily into mod? Was this high school or was this later or were you?
It was a little bit after high school, probably late 90s, early 2000s when Britpop hit.
Yep.
Because it kind of really meshed in with me discovering that early 60s British sound, and then Britpop hit. And there was a lot of that influence going on. And I, especially with Oasis, they really kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of way flew the mod flag a little bit. I mean, you had Liam and Noel in their parkas and, you know, mod targets up everywhere. And I was like, oh, hey, this is kind of mod. And I would go to these Britpop nights in the city, and a lot of them would be a mod/Britpop night. So they would play the Britpop music, and then you'd also have the 60s music and the soul music. So it was kind of all then, late 90s, early 2000s when I really started to get into it.
As we go through our conversation today, we're going to use a couple of terms that I'm hoping you can give everybody a few definitions of. So the first one is mod, and you talked a little bit about it when you were talking about the Punks and Parkas name. But yeah. Somebody that doesn't know what mod is, how would you describe mod?
You know, it's funny. Like, I've been doing a mod show for 10 years. I still don't know.
Okay.
Because it's such a broad term, but like the easiest way to describe it to somebody who doesn't know is mod is short for modernist. And that was a group of kids. And I mean kids, like early teenagers, mm-hmm. in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s in London, who they were obsessed with kind of everything that was modern. So they wanted the best music. They wanted the most modern looking clothes. They wanted the best, most sleek, modern looking transportation with that, which at the time was scooters.
Scooters, yeah.
And they were kind of the opposite of the rockers, right? When you think of a greaser or a rocker, it's somebody who looks back, right? They were looking back to the 50s and the modernists were looking forward.
Okay.
So that's kind of where the original modernist came from. And it's really over the years and over the revivals, it's kind of become slightly ironic when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Cause you know, you look at modernists today or mods today and they look like some of them look like they fell out of 1964. So, but that's the best way to describe it. It's somebody who has a passion for soul music, has a passion for R&B, pays attention to the details, is passionate about style and kind of lives that throughout their whole, like every aspect of their life, right?
And when I started going to the mod club in Ottawa, the main thing that drew me in was more kind of modern. I don't know if it was Britpop. I don't know when Britpop ended. I don't know if it, you know, did Britpop end in the early 2000s?
Did it ever end? I think so, yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, like, like to me, is like Kaiser Chiefs Britpop, or is that just something that happened in Britain, you know?
I consider it Britpop myself. Okay.
So like, you know, bands like that were what kind of drew me into Mod Club, but then, you know, 3/4 of the music ended up being soul and R&B and even like aspects of like Motown.
Yeah, yeah.
And so how does that, like, it, mod to me seems to encompass such a wide variety of music. Is that how it was meant to be?
That's a really good question. I don't know. I think originally the mods, like I said, they were definitely into the most new, exciting sound. And at the time that was The Who, The Kinks. These were bands that were doing things that weren't being done musically before. Mm-hmm. And now it's so different, right? Because you have these new bands that kind of take that retro influence. And they, you know, some of them sound like they could be from the 60s, but some of them are taking that influence and mixing it up. So it's so hard to put in a box. It really is. And I think that's why I like my show, because it's so, there's so much.
Well, I've heard
that
your,
can fit into it.
Yeah. And you've played, I've heard your show play blues. I've heard it play jazz.
Yeah.
I've heard it play soul. I've heard it play, I guess, what you would define as Britpop. So
there's a guy in the UK called Eddie Pillar, and he's been on the mod scene for years, and his big saying is it's a broad church. And it is, because it encompasses anything that just really kind of emulates that style aspect, that attention to detail, and that the best of the best kind of thing.
Okay. Here's another term, Northern Soul.
Oh God, that's harder. Northern Soul. See, in the mid 60s in the States, you definitely had Motown, which was a powerhouse, and that Motown sound, right? Mm-hmm. And what happened was a lot of smaller labels tried to emulate that sound. So they would, you know, find an artist, some unknown person, and be like, hey, you've got a good voice. We're going to put out some soul records. And they would put maybe a run of 200-300 of these records out. But because they couldn't compete with Motown, because it was such a powerhouse, mm-hmm. a lot of these labels kind of went belly up. A lot of these singles didn't really get released. They kind of got socked away. And what happened is when the mod scene started to kind of die, people will argue that it died in 65 or 66, the original mod scene. But when it started to die down and the 70s came in, there was a group in the north of England that were listening to were finding these old soul records and were listening to them and were playing them to packed houses. And there was a record shop. I can't remember the name of it right now, but in the north of England, there was a record shop and people would always come in looking. And these songs have a very specific sound. I mean, Motown, you could recognize it 4 bars in, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's Motown. And same with these. They have that very distinct Motown-y sound, and people were always looking for them. And he was like, oh, well, I need to categorize this. And he's like, well, I'll call it Northern Soul. And he would bring in these records, and it soon became this huge, huge movement in the 70s in the north of England. For example, there's a club that used to play Northern Soul called the Wigan Casino.
Okay.
And it was 74-ish, I think, but it beat out Studio 54 as the best club in the world.
Okay.
So that kind of comparison, right? We all know how big Studio, like the legend of Studio 54 is. Yep. Right? Everybody knows what Studio 54. So this club, that's how insanely popular Northern Soul had gotten, that it was this huge phenomenon. So it's these really rare, obscure, really expensive 45s.
So if I was to ask you, like, could you name like any like obvious, you know, artists for Northern Soul? That's pretty hard because this is a real, again, really hard to find stuff.
If you know the artist, like Frank Wilson, Do I Love You, Indeed I Do, is like the most rare Northern Soul song. There's only two known 45s of this record in the world. So those who are into the scene know the song. Like, as soon as I say Do I Love You, they know it. But not a lot of people know who Frank Wilson is because he only did that song, right? So it's kind of hard.
Have you amassed a Northern Soul collection?
Not originals.
Okay.
It's too expensive, but I know my friend Maude Marty, who also hosts a show on UMFM, he's got some, and it's a passion, and you really have to have drive and the will to, you know, part with your money on one record. I thought about it, but I'm like, I can't justify paying $500 for 145. Yeah. Like, I'll just get it on a compilation or I'll download it. You know, I'm one of those people.
Yeah, I hear you. Another term that we've already used, Britpop. When did this start and what is it?
That's hard for me to define. I always consider Britpop the start of Britpop and kind of Oasis hit over here for me, which was, what, 96, 90, no, 94, I think. But it was a kind of a wave of British music that late 90s, early 2000s with bands like Britpop, and you had Blur.
Pulp,
yeah, that's another one. And
Charlatans? I don't know.
Charlatans, yeah, I would consider them an ocean color scene.
Yeah.
And they had a very distinct sound that was very British. It was very rock and roll. It fought against that grunge sound that was very popular at the time. It was like a return back to like guitar based music, really. Like, I hate to describe it as 60s sounding, but it had that, you know, that chord progression. It wasn't grunge. It was something completely different. And I love it.
So what did you think the first time that you heard Definitely Maybe by Oasis? Did you like it immediately? Did you think that it was a ripoff of the scene? Like, what was your...
I liked it. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Definitely Maybe. For me, the first Oasis that I really got into was What's the Story, Morning Glory. I kind of missed Definitely Maybe.
I think a lot of us did. I did. I was What's the Story, Morning Glory, and then I was like, wait, there's another Oasis album?
That's exactly what I did.
And went back and found it, and then later discovering that one's actually, I guess, considered the original classic, at least in the UK, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You not only DJ on the radio show, but you also do live DJing?
I do, not as much anymore, but every so often, yeah.
And when did you get started? Did you do live DJing before the radio or?
Not at all. It was never even something on my radar. It was basically, I'd been doing the show for a little under a year. And like I said earlier, my friend Aaron needed the Invisible Man needed somebody to kind of cover. And he was like, I'll show you how to do it. It's really easy.
And was this,
you'll be fine.
And was at the time, was this just digital or was this on vinyl that you were spinning records?
It was actually CDs started on. Yeah, so it was kind of user-friendly. But I did that first gig, and I kind of liked it. People seemed to respond really well to what I did. I had a lot of people come up to me afterwards saying, like, that was wicked. I had a lot of people coming up saying, it's really nice to see a woman doing that. Because at the time, I don't think there was a lot of female DJs in the city. I think there was maybe two or three of us at the time, so I was like, okay, well, here's an untapped market. And I just kind of hung around with the guys I knew who DJed in clubs. And I was like, give me a gig. And kind of just went from there.
So when you were at the heaviest for DJing, how often were you spinning?
That was probably when the Mod Club was in Winnipeg, and I did guest spots once a month, plus periodically we would do other nights, so a couple times a month, really.
And you've gotten back into, like, you eventually went into vinyl whenever you could?
Yeah, Marty, Mod Marty, actually introduced me to spinning vinyl live, because it's another progression, right? It's vinyl's a little bit of a trickier beast, I find, than CDs or digital. A lot more can go wrong. So it was nice to have somebody kind of walk me through. But once I started doing it, I just loved it. It was so, there's something about a record and putting a record on. And yeah, I try to do that whenever I can. I really love it.
Over 10, well, almost 10 years now doing the radio show. Are you still, you know, feeling excited every week to do it? Have you had moments where you're like, maybe it's time to pack it in, or are you still
into this? It's kind of, it's funny about, I think it was November of 2012. I actually contacted the station manager at UMFM, and I was like, you know, I think I'm done. I always said to myself, when it starts to feel like work, it's not, because this is, a lot of people think we get paid to do this stuff. We don't. Mm-hmm. So I always said to myself, once it feels like work, it's time to pull the plug. And it was starting to feel like work. It was starting to, I was getting a little disillusioned with it. I didn't think anybody was listening. And he kind of convinced me to stick around till the spring. And then I hooked up with Warren and started doing We Are the Mods with him. And it kind of rejuvenated me. And I kept going. So, and still, like, every day it doesn't feel like work yet. Some days it does, but not on a whole, so.
All right, let's take a little break from the interview to go through some housekeeping items and give you some information about this show. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can look us up at Beyond the Handle is the handle. For the show, so definitely give us a follow there. We are on Facebook. Do a search for Beyond the Handle, and we will pop right up there for you. If you are not listening to this show via iTunes or Stitcher, you can go to each of those platforms and subscribe to the show. Again, just go in and search for Beyond the Handle. We will pop up there for you. Click on subscribe, and the new episodes will download to your device every week as soon as they are posted, which is nice, easy, and convenient. Of course, if you just want to hear a stream of a specific episode, you can also go to beyondthehandle.podomatic.com and you can find the show right there and listen to any episode that you would like to hear. If you'd like to email me and give me some feedback, recommend a guest, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself, I'd love to hear from you. The email address is beyondthehandle@gmail.com. And again, any feedback via Twitter or via email is very much appreciated. We are a part of the Garbage Hill Network of podcasts. This is Winnipeg's first podcast network and features a number of local podcasts from around the city of Winnipeg. You can give them a follow at Garbage Hill on Twitter, and their website is www.garbagehillnetwork.com. So with all that being said, let's get back into the interview. This is DJ Penny Lane at DJ Penny Lane on Twitter here on Beyond the Handle. And you had mentioned that between Punks and Parkas and We Are the Mods, are they both syndicated?
They are. We Are the Mods is syndicated. It's on UMFM, plus on a whole whack load of other stations worldwide. A lot of online radio stations, plus it's a podcast too. So
Was it War and Peace that set all that up, or were you involved in syndicating as well? Or,
you know, he had the show going before I got on it. Okay. And when I was thinking of quitting, and Jared, the station manager at UMFM, kind of encouraged me to go on, I was looking for shows to listen to kind of inspire me and to keep me going. And I found his, I downloaded a few episodes, and I remember it was one afternoon at work, I was like, oh, I guess I should listen to this. And I put it on, and I was blown away. I was like, okay, this guy is getting me riled up. He's playing some great music. He is kind of pissing me off a little bit, but he's making me laugh. And, you know, I went and I looked at the Facebook page for the show, and it was like 15,000 fans, and he's thousands of downloads a week. And I'm like, wait a second. I've been doing this 7-8 years. He'd only been doing it not even a year, and he was having this great success. So I was like, oh, what the hell? So I emailed him, and that's how, you know, we got along really well. He interviewed me for that show. And then after we kept in touch and he just said, you know, I like doing the show, but I would like to have a co-host. It's nicer to have somebody to kind of bounce ideas off of and talk to, and we work really well together. So he suggested it, and I've been his lackey ever since.
Did you do the show live on the air, or do you record in advance?
We record We Are the Mods in advance.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why it sounds so professional.
Yeah. So I'm seeing, and I'm reading here, that this was now defunct, the show, and it was the most popular mod show in the world at one time?
It was, yeah. We there's a pretty good online magazine called The Mod Generation, and they do a fantastic job of just keeping abreast of mod news, basically. And they do a poll every year. And I think in 2014, We Are the Mods was voted the number one show, taking over 56% of the vote.
Wow.
So it was, we were blown away by that. We were also shortlisted on the Mixcloud RFA online shows awards as well. We didn't make the finals, but we were shocked to be shortlisted because we were the only really subculture specific show that was shortlisted. So we were really proud of that, and thousands of listeners worldwide. Like, it's, you know, 50,000 fans on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, it's absolutely insane.
And then the show ended this past March?
It ended this March. We pulled the plug.
Just figured it was time?
We found that we were just, every time we sat down to plan a show for the past couple of months, it was like, okay, well, what are we going to talk about? Well, we can talk about this again. We can say the same things over and over again. And we just started to feel, we were repeating ourselves. There's a lot of, and I'm going to kick myself for saying this, but there's a lot of ridiculousness in the mod scene as well.
Okay.
And we were seeing a lot of that. A lot of people just, everybody's got an opinion, right? And it's always the ones with the strongest opinions that have the negative opinions, right? And we were just done. We were just, you know, we had said our piece. We had said how we felt about mod, what we interpreted it to be, and we were done. We're done repeating ourselves. So we just.
Was the show music or social commentary or both?
It's more a talk show. Okay. So, but we play music, we do talk, and we also do interviews. We've had some pretty big names on the show in the past couple of years. Like, we try to interview people, you know, people that are involved in the mod scene on a day-to-day basis, but also we try to get some celebrity interviews as well. So, like, we've interviewed, I think I've talked to Dave Davies of the Kinks.
You mentioned that in the question there. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that.
I got to talk to Alan McGee, who is famous for signing Oasis and starting Creation Records. Uh-huh. I talked, you know, Carl Barat from the Libertines. So we got a lot of these big name interviews, but we also interviewed people like this fantastic woman whose name is Jill Evans, and she's a designer, and she was a mod before there was a name for mods. Okay. She was there at the start of it. So, you know, it's nice to talk to those people too and actually get firsthand accounts of what it was like, right? So, yeah.
Who was the first, I guess, famous person who you ended up speaking to? And how was that?
That I was really nervous about?
Yeah.
You know what? It would be my other co-host, Johnny Owen.
Okay.
Before he joined us on the show, I had known him. He's a British actor. I've seen him in a lot of things. He was in a movie called, I think it's called A Bit of Tom Jones.
Okay.
He was in the UK version of Shameless, and he did this web series that I was a huge fan of called Svengali, which is about this kind of bumbling, fun-loving guy who's trying to get a band signed. And it's just this little web series that he did that was actually really popular. I was a huge fan of it, and I suggested to Warren that we should interview him, and he was like, okay, set it up. And I was like, you want me to talk to Johnny O? You're joking. So I had a couple of gins and, you know, talked to him, and now he's a co-host and a friend.
And now you've also mentioned that you're actually going to be starting a new show very soon with War and Peace and Johnny Owen.
We are. We still like doing the show. We just wanted to change the format and change the theme of it. So yeah, we've got a new show in the works. Warren told me before I got in the air, he's like, you can't say anything.
Okay.
So I have to keep it a little mum's the word. But yeah, we're aiming for the end of the month to have everything throwing up on the world, I guess. So.
And that'll be on Twitter, I'm sure, when it's time to go.
Oh, yeah. It'll be everywhere.
So everybody keep your eyes peeled for that.
Got it.
I want to talk about something that's near and dear to my heart that we touched upon a little bit earlier, but collecting vinyl and records.
Yeah.
So when did you really start getting into collecting records?
It's kind of funny. I've been buying vinyl since I was probably about 16.
Okay.
16 or 17. I had a friend in high school. We were both huge Beatles fans. We loved Pink Floyd. We had a lot of very similar musical interests. And he was an avid collector even before I met him. And he started taking me to, we used to call it the regular spots in the city. So like Into the Music, Music Trader, any place that sold vinyl. On our Saturdays, that's what we do. We'd go do the rounds in the city, right? And at the time, it was cheaper to buy vinyl, right? If I wanted to buy a bunch of Who albums, I could buy all of them for $10 on vinyl, as opposed to paying $10 for a CD. So to me, it was more like it was an economical thing. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to buy it on vinyl. I have a turntable at home. Why not? And I don't know when it kind of switched for me. Probably when I started doing the show, actually, because I had another reason to buy records and I was learning more about music. And yeah, I started just, I don't have a CD player in my house.
Okay.
For me, it's like I've always had turntables and records have always been the easiest way for me to play music in my house. So I've just always bought records.
And living in Winnipeg, obviously, you know, if you want to buy, I don't know, Nana Maruski, you can pick that up anywhere at Valley Village or whatever, right?
But, I've got about four for albums.
But if you want to buy something that's obviously a little bit harder to get your hands on, it may not always be the easiest place to find music. So do you search elsewhere?
You know, anytime I travel, I always make it a point to, especially if I know somebody in the city I'm going to, I'm like, where are a few good places to look for records? So that's always something I do whenever I travel. Apart from that, I'm not the type of person who, like, I need this record, right? Mm-hmm. You know, certain people see that something's out there and they just need it. For me, it's more, if I'm out and I see it, I'll buy it. It's very rare that, yeah, I'd get that urge where I'm going to search and search and search for something. But that's definitely what I do. Whenever I travel, I'm always looking for a record store.
Are there any favorites that you've been to?
I can't remember the name of it, but there's one in Windsor. When I was there, oh my God, it had to be about 8 or 9 years ago, huge record store. And I remember I walked in and I was like, I didn't really find anything I liked. And I was going to walk out and I found a CD that was, I think it's called Garage Beat 66. And it's a compilation of really obscure 60s garage rock.
Okay.
And I picked it up and I was looking at it and the guy was like, oh, you're into, I've got stuff you'd like. And he took me to the section and I ended up spending about $250 on records. it was everything I touched in that bin. I was like, I want this. I want this. I want this. I wish I could remember the name of the store.
In Windsor.
In Windsor, yeah.
I was in Detroit in December and I didn't even think to look for anywhere in Windsor. I went around Detroit. And surprisingly, maybe I just didn't find the right places, but surprisingly, nothing terribly thrilling in Detroit.
You know, I just had a friend who was in Detroit and he said the same thing too. He's like, I brought a whack load of cash and he's like, I went home with a whack load of cash.
I was ready to go in Detroit and it didn't happen. I should have stayed in Canada and tried to find something over in Windsor.
I'm kidding.
Have you traveled overseas to the UK?
I did. We got to go over to London last year for March. We were asked to do a personal appearance at an event for, it's called March of the Mods, and it's a month-long series of events that goes on in the UK from March, where every city across the UK who wants to puts on an event, and all the money that's raised goes to Teenage Cancer Trust.
Okay.
So we were asked if we wouldn't mind coming down and making a public appearance. I'm doing the air quotes. Uh-huh. At this event in a small town called Reading, and the three of us at the time, it was myself, Warren Peace, and our host at the time was Graham Lentz. We decided, well, why not? You know? I had never been. Warren's originally from the UK, so he's like, oh, it's a good chance to see family. And our other co-host lives in the UK, so yeah, we went on down.
How long did you go over for?
You know, I was only there for about a week. It's always been my dream to go. Like, I was actually gonna go out of high school, but a bunch of stuff happened. I couldn't make it. So yeah, it was kind of like the one number one on the bucket list for me was to get to London. And yeah, I got off the plane, and once I got through customs, it was like the tears were flowing. And yeah, it was fantastic. It was a great trip. I had such a great time.
What were some of the highlights?
Well, Abbey Road for me was definitely a highlight. First thing I told my friend Graham, I was like, okay, we're going to Abbey Road. I don't care. So got to do the zebra crossing and see the Abbey Road studios. What else was a highlight? Definitely, my friend Graham, who was kind of my tour guide, took me to a bar one night in a little seedy kind of area of London, and I saw the most incredible band. The place was, you know, in the city here, there's not a lot of mods. You know, mm-hmm. there's a handful of us. So when we go to a bar, you know, there's like four of us and then everybody else, right?
Yeah.
This time I walked into a bar and it was like everybody packed to the gills with mods. It was like jaw dropping for me. And the band was fantastic. And, you know, these guys in nice suits and the girls are dressed to the nines. And it was just, oh, it was fantastic. I had such a good time.
I'm assuming that going back is on your list.
We were hoping to go back this past March, but it didn't happen. But yeah, I have to go back. There's so many things I didn't get to do. So
before we get off the topic of music, I was hoping that you might want to give some recommendations to listeners in terms of, you know, where they should search for good music, and obviously in the mod genre. And I have three categories that I was hoping you might want to give some recommendations on. So the first one is probably the easiest one, historical. Where would I get started?
A good place to start, I would say the Small Faces is a really good band to start with. Early Small Faces, they were kind of a group of mods who made a band. I know a lot of people go to The Who, but believe it or not, The Who were kind of a manufactured mod band. I'd say, yeah, go with the Small Faces, early Small Faces.
Okay. The next one is anything that's modern, anything from today that people should be searching out.
Oh, I love a band called French Boutique.
Okay.
They're really fantastic. They've got a very 60s vibe mixed with now. There's another great band out of Russia called The Riots.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, I said to a friend, it's like you put the Sex Pistols, the Clash, and the Jam in a blender, and you've got this. And they're so amazing. And actually, in the States, there's a band called RAF Mod Band, and they make some of the best, like, 3-minute power pop songs. You know, just good time rock and roll, and a bunch of really sweet guys as well, but they're fantastic.
And then the last category I have, I don't know if there's much that exists, but anything local.
Local in the mod scene.
If not Winnipeg, then Canadian.
There's a lot Canadian wise, but even in Winnipeg, a good band to go see would always be the English Moccasins.
Okay.
Because you've got a couple of Brits in there, you've got two other guys, and they play a lot of 60s covers. Everyone is really accomplished musicians and fantastic. If you want to go somewhere where you'll see a bunch of mods in Winnipeg, I would definitely, any kind of ska show, really.
Okay.
So bands like JFK and the Conspirators, if they do shows anymore. well, they've got one coming up, but yeah, you'll definitely see them out at those events. Also, Noble Thieves, I would definitely put in that list too, because they've got a good soulful kind of vibe going on.
Perfect. Where do you find out about all these bands?
You know, it's funny. In the last little while, they've been approaching me, so it's been really easy. But before that, I would buy a magazine called Shindig Magazine.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's this great underground psychedelic garage rock soul magazine.
Okay.
And I buy great articles. I would read the articles. In the back, they had a fantastic review section. And I would just peruse through that and, you know, see a name. I thought, oh, okay, review sounds good. I'd look it up on YouTube. And that's how I discovered a lot of bands. The newer bands that I played on the show was from that magazine.
And now they're coming to you.
Now they come to me, so it's so much easier.
All right. Still, I guess, on the mod topic, perhaps, but something I'm a lot less versed in than music, as my friends will attest to. But you mentioned that style is so damn important.
It is important.
Do you want to talk about kind of style, I guess, first as it relates to the mod scene and how it is so important? So damn important?
So damn important. A lot of early mods, and I mean, I wasn't around during the mod revival in the 70s or 80s, but especially in the UK, because I'm Canadian, and I was born in 79, so I wasn't around. But from those who were that I've talked to, the mod mentality was dressing above your station in life. So even though you might have been working class, mm-hmm. why look it, right? You know? Dress above your station in life. So you have people who were working these crap jobs Monday to Friday, but on the weekend, they could put on a suit and look like $1 million and feel like $1 million. And that happened, you know, in the early 60s and then the mod revival in the 70s and 80s when the UK was in a bit of financial turmoil. You had these kids wearing suits, right?
Yeah.
And even today, I did an interview a couple of days ago with a friend. His name's Jason. We talked about how you feel personally when you actually, you know, quote unquote, suit up, right? It changes your demeanor. It changes how you walk. It changes how you treat people, and it changes how people treat you. And I know it's kind of very surface, mm-hmm. and some people may even go to say it's a vain thing, but which I heard often. But it's to me, it's a respectful thing too. I would rather be overdressed in an environment than underdressed. And it's important. I think it's very important, and it's something that society has kind of forgotten. We've become sloppy.
Just too easy to pick up a pair of sweatpants at Walmart, and
it really is. Like today, before this interview, I had to run some errands, and I went to the grocery store. I went to Safeway in a dress and heels and a jacket. And I can't tell you like how many people were looking at me like I was an alien. And I'm like, you know what? In 1959, you wouldn't bat an eye. So like, what has changed, and why have we become so sloppy, and why have we become so, it's almost like we degraded as a society. So just put a little bit of pride in your appearance. And,
If you were to direct people towards, places to find some tips on style for, the mod culture, or just, I guess, looking good in general, where would you direct them? Where would you direct me? I'm not a sweatpants guy, but I'm a jeans and hockey jersey guy. So
yeah,
I need some direction. Help me.
I know a guy in Montreal. His name is Patrick Foisy, who writes a fantastic blog called Parka Avenue, Living as a Mod in the 21st Century. And this guy, he is very style dedicated, and he writes, I'd say he puts out a post every week or 2 weeks, and he dissects his style. He dissects, like, where is the best place to get stuff. Like, for example, up until a few years ago, I had no idea you can get a bespoke suit done online. I didn't realize that there were people that, you know, you could send in your measurements and they'll send you a suit. Like, to me, that was foreign, but that's what mods did, right? Everything was personalized. It was one-upmanship, doing it better than the guy next to you and being different than the guy next to you. So what better way to be different than design your own suit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he definitely breaks it down. He looks at shoes. He looks at socks. He talks about accessories. He talks about furniture. He talks about music too. He's a great DJ. But yeah, his blog is a great place to start. Parka Avenue, you'll find. And he's Canadian too, so he's out of Montreal.
And you mentioned that you're going to be venturing into the blogosphere in the near future.
I am. I sort of do a blog that's up there now, but it's more just advertising the show. But Punks and Park is a syndicated on a website / radio station called Punk Aristocrats. And Punk Aristocrats is a group of guys in LA. They've started a record label. They're doing it old school, where they do a lot of artist development, recording, using 8-track, and it's fantastic what they're doing, but they've got this all-encompassing website with radio and blogs. And I called out the guys mm-hmm. because all the blogs are very male-centric. I'm like, you know, there's girls in the music industry. There's girls everywhere. Stop talking about men. And when I did that, Jason was like, well, you just got yourself a blog, Missy. That's how it works.
have you posted anything yet?
You know, it's supposed to be posted this week. I submitted my piece on yesterday, and Jason said he was going to have it up on the site soon. So if you go to punkaristocrats.com and go to the blog section, it's just going to be titled under Punks and Parkas, and you should be able to find it.
If you were to direct me towards other female DJs in the city, You said that at the time you started, there weren't many. I'm assuming there might be a few more. Are there any that you would recommend?
Definitely. One of my favorites, and she's been around longer than I have, is Mama Cutsworth.
Mm-hmm.
She's fantastic. She hosts Stylist Radio on CKUW, on your station, so yeah. You know her. And I admire her a lot because not only is she a fantastic DJ, but she loves to share that knowledge with people. She does these workshops to help empower women. She does amazing events, just really creative events around the city that encourage other women to come out and DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, to me, she's my idol in the city.
I saw recently at, that new bar down on near Sherbrooke and Portage there. I'm trying to.
Oh, the Goodwill?
The Goodwill, that she's doing something on Saturday afternoons, like.
Yeah.
Playing DJing for like kids.
Yes. She did a kids dance party. Like, how awesome is that?
And how about in the mod scene? Are there any female blogs, female DJs, anyone else that you would want, people to direct their attention to?
There are a lot in the UK that I could recommend,
mm-hmm.
but how many of us are going to get over there soon? I don't know. There's, you know, there's definitely, like I said, when I was in the UK, there's a lot of females involved in the scene. You just got to search them out. I know DJ Petite Feet is one. There's a fantastic DJ in Dallas, DJ Say Yes, that kind of does the Northern Soul thing, and she's great. Yeah, there's actually a lot of females. I don't know if a lot of them will go under the quote-unquote mod name. Mm-hmm. A lot of them just go and spin a lot of soul and R&B and stuff. So they're out there. They're everywhere.
Just keep searching. I mean, that's what I find for trying to find new music, for example. You know, just there are sources everywhere. You just have to go for it. Don't sit back and let the radio tell you what to listen to.
Sometimes, yeah.
Do some work. Do some work and you'll find it. Trust me, you'll find what you love.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless the radio is Punks and Parkas, of course.
Yeah, listen to my own show. It's like, I know that song.
Do you want to tell people where they can hear the show, all the places?
Okay, well, I'm on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. on UMFM. It's also streaming live at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time at umfm.com. If you can't catch it there, just search for Punks and Parkas on iTunes or go to punksandparkas.podomatic.com and you could subscribe to the podcast. I also stream on the Punks Aristocrats website, which is punkaristocrats.com. I'm also on Mod Radio, which is modradio.co.uk. So it's a lot of places.
Lots of places to hear the show, and it's very easy to set it up so it just pushes to your device as well as a podcast. So,
exactly.
You know, hit up Penny Lane or hit me up and I'll tell you how to do it. I have it pushing to mine too. So, this has been DJ Penny Lane, and I'm very glad I've been following your work for probably 8 or 9 years now.
Wow.
And so I'm glad to finally have a conversation with you and get to chat. But thank you very much for coming on Beyond the Handle. And if you want to find her on Twitter, it's at DJ Penny Lane, and I will post links to, all of the places where you can hear her shows and hopefully a new one in the very near future too.
Knock on wood.
So thank you very much for coming on to the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
So there you have it. That was DJ Penny Lane speaking about music and mod culture and all sorts of other goodness. You can find her again on Twitter at DJ Penny Lane. Look up her show. It's called Punks and Parkas, and you can find that over at punksandparkas.podomatic.com. It's also an easy download over on iTunes. Just go over to iTunes and do a search for Punks and Parkas, and it's the first thing that's going to pop up there for you, and even has her name there, Penny Lane, so that you can find it really, really easily. So check that out as well. You can also go over to a website called punkaristocrats.com. It's a really great site that has a radio station and a blog and a lot of other information around the mod culture. And Penny Lane's show is syndicated on that station, along with another show that she used to do called We Are the Mods with DJ War and Peace. And as Penny had mentioned on the show, We Are the Mods ended their run back in March of this year, but there is a new project coming with her, War and Peace, and Johnny Owen, and that's all I know for the time being. So again, check her out on Twitter, and I'm sure there will be a big announcement when that new project is launched. So we're going to end the show with a band that Penny Lane recommended. They're called French Boutique, and we're going to hear the track Mieux Comme Ça. You can find them over on iTunes. So check them out on iTunes and download one of their EPs right away. It's really, really good music. So here we go. This is French Boutique. Thank you very much for listening and have yourself a great week.
So what? La vie se donne plus court.